This is the Hashrate Crypto Mining Podcast, your best choice for quality conversations on cryptocurrency mining equipment, spec plays, and relevant news. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the show. Now, here are your hosts, Crypto Chris Walken, Whale Bearman, and the Bitcoin Broski.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Crypto Mining Podcast. I'm your host, the Bitcoin Broski, here today with my co-host, Crypto Chris Walken and Whale Bearman. We are joined by special guest Alex Zeidelson with Beam. So Alex, we're excited to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Thanks for this kind intro.
We're always eager to get people on that can educate our crowd on not only the, you know, their company, the project, the coin that they're working on, but also just have kind of a high-level conversation about everything that's going on in the market that impacts you as a business owner, as an operator, as someone who is trying to make a change to the space that we're all living and working within. You know, I'm going to go ahead and kick it off because I would say of all of us on this call, I'm probably the least technical, right? So what I would love is just a high level overview of, you know, what is Beam, why Mimblewimble, and, you know, why did you guys launch when you did and how you did?
Okay, great. So Beam is a privacy coin based on Mimblewimble protocol with a vision of creating a coin that is both confidential and opt-in compliant. And not just a coin, but a full platform that will allow trading of the native token as well as other tokens on the platform. So Mimblewimble, as we see it, is the next generation of blockchain protocols that solves the problem of privacy out of the box without any penalty to scalability. Actually, it's the other way around. The blockchain is way smaller than it is for other blockchains. And by doing this, it actually paves the way to this future vision where people have their privacy back, because on today, most of today's cryptocurrencies, it's not there without the scalability penalty. And our addition to that is enabling opt-in compliance, because we believe this is the way that this is what will enable, you know, businesses and a wider ecosystem to actually use the coin.
So when you guys started with Mimblewimble, what made you realize that Beam was going to launch with Mimblewimble protocol?
Well, the project started around February, March 2018. The team actually reviewed Mimblewimble and we understood that this is really a great new protocol, and it's both technically beautiful and has a huge potential. So we formed a company, we raised money, and we started development. And in just, 9 months, we were able to build the protocol, and we launched on January 3, which was the 10th anniversary of Bitcoin Genesis Block. We felt it was a very nice date to launch at. And we're running since then. So the choice of Mimblewimble, I mean, it was not like we were sitting and thinking, okay, shall we build a coin and what would the protocol be? It was like we learned about Mimblewimble and said, wow, this is such a great thing. So let's build a coin or another coin on top of that, because the Grin project already existed by then. So we felt it was moving relatively slowly, and we felt that there was a place for another implementation, and that's what we did.
So Alex, this has probably been asked before, but there seems to be a ton of privacy coins on the market, right? And maybe you guys
actually four.
Well, but I mean, in the proof of work space, right? There seems to be a lot of coins that pop up and say they're a privacy coin, not comparing at all and saying that they're all lumped mm-hmm. into the same category, but everyone seems to jump on that hype word of privacy, right? Now, as a coin, how are you guys going to serve the market in a different capacity?
So first of all, the Mimblewimble protocol in itself gives a lot of advantages, right? Most of the other privacy coins, and you know, if we're talking about the leading ones, we of course can name Monero and Zcash.
Right.
So both of them are doing a great job, amazing technologies, but they're blockchain weight is much heavier than that of Bitcoin. And that's because, you know, in a very broad terms, you know, they had to take the same basis as everybody else, you know, the Bitcoin kind of basic architecture, and then add some very smart stuff to hide everything, right? And that has a cost on the blockchain side, right? So Mimblewimble allows to, you know, to start with a completely privacy-oriented architecture and without the scalability penalty. Now, what we are bringing besides that, what we're bringing is, you know, very good usability, and our roadmap has this opt-in compliance concept, which should be a game changer in the privacy space. Because today, frankly, it's very hard to play ball with the existing ecosystem, with the existing financial ecosystem, if you're using privacy coins, right? Because it's very hard to go through AML procedures, and it's very hard to prove your transactions to anyone. So we want to solve that.
Yeah, so when you say you're going to be compliant with AML, that obviously, I guess on the privacy side, would resemble kind of Zcash route, where they have the shielded transactions, right? And then they have unshielded transactions right now. I know if you were to send Zcash to, say, an exchange like Gemini that has Zcash, and they are, you know, AML compliant, you can't send shielded transactions, right?
Well, it's somewhat similar, but not exactly. So in Zcash, you can be either completely private or completely public, right? So yeah. Either nobody sees anything or everybody sees everything, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't think that this everybody sees everything scenario actually has a right to exist, you know, in grander scheme of things, right? Because no business, no individual is actually willing to expose their financials, right? And today, with the proliferation of blockchain analysis tools, you know, this illusion that people have that there is some privacy in open blockchain is just vanishing, right? So whatever you're doing on non-shielded addresses in Zcash can be revealed, right? And tied back to you. So our vision is that everything is private by default, but you can add additional layer of information that is not visible to everyone, just to specific bodies that can analyze that, such as this exchange or some third party. So the privacy is still there. So if you go through AML, you lose part of the privacy, but not you're not open to everyone and anyone. And that's very important.
So who would you be open to?
So we're still going to figure out who will be the players in this industry. So it can be people we call risk assessors, like it can be some regulated entities who are trusted by, you know, the banks or regulated exchanges, which eventually are very similar in terms of regulation. So some sort of third parties that will be able to review some parts of the transaction history, and together say that, you know, the whole transaction history is all compliant.
Gotcha.
Okay, so that's the basic idea. So it's not like opening all of the blockchain to everyone. It's opening relevant part of it to someone, some very specific bodies. Like think of an auditor, okay, like an auditing company who, you know, I can show my financials as a company to my auditor, right? My auditor knows everything, right? So they can see all of my transactions and they can make sure I'm paying the right amount of taxes or not. Now, in terms of IML, I should be able to show the trace of my funds from those that passed through those compliant wallets. And everybody who is playing this compliance game knows that they're playing this compliance game. And they know that they're announcing some of their privacy, right? Mm-hmm. In order to be able to be in this compliant field. Now, people who don't want to play the compliance game, who want to stay in confidential coin, will definitely be able to do that. Sure. So the layer of compliance is on top of the blockchain. It's not part of the, but it references the blockchain.
Okay, so then, with that being said, where do you see, or which market do you see being one of the first or the first to implement and really use Beam?
So in the beginning, we want to solve this problem for people who are currently active on the market, you know, for traders who are trading stable coins, utility tokens, eventually security tokens as well, or looking at the STO space, because the problem of confidentiality is there, right? I mean, now more and more people understand whatever they do, they need to be confidential. But then when they start thinking, okay, how can we do that? They understand that they need to provide some sort of a trail. So we'll start from the use cases of STOs and stablecoins utility tokens and figure out the exact parts of compliance that are required for those, and then gradually move forward to other asset classes and eventually to cash itself, which is like the most, which is like the most difficult part. But the idea is to make Beam eventually, you know, be able to go through an AML test and be accepted, but without exposing too much of the privacy, with a bearable amount of privacy loss. Okay, and that the players in the market, the same way as today, you know, when we're dealing with fiat, right? Our banks know everything, right?
Right.
But they kind of usually don't tell other people, right?
Correct. Yeah. Kinda. Well, at least we would hope they don't, right?
Yeah, we would hope they don't. So the philosophy is to create a system where we have some of those trusted parties which are necessary in order to enable this interaction between fiat and crypto, but without exposing all my privacy now, but we still leave the option for full confidentiality. So it will be good for both worlds. And hopefully this will enable adoption of cryptos, of, you know, specifically Beam, for businesses, right, who want to enjoy the benefits of cryptocurrency, you know, of holding your own assets, being protected from inflation, and all, you know, easy payments across the globe, all the great stuff, and have the ability to, you know, pay the taxes if they need to, and convert to fiat if they need to, but without exposing everything they do to everyone.
Well, it's really interesting. I think that that's, you know, obviously the ideal use case, and everyone's trying to figure out right now how to placate the government, so to speak, because ultimately for anything to be used as a currency on a wide scale, there has to be some traceability, because no government is going to allow a completely anonymous or shielded currency to be in existence, because taxes wouldn't get paid.
It's hard to prohibit it, really, right? You cannot really stop that.
Right.
But if this currency cannot be converted to fiat in a good way, right, it is kind of, it remains a niche thing.
Correct.
Right. Because, you know, fiat is, you know, whether we like it or not, does look like fiat is disappearing anytime really soon. Right. Maybe the crypto dream will materialize later, but, you know, the states are not disappearing. They will not just relinquish control and disappear. And I'm not sure we want them to disappear, frankly, because there are some good things, right, and that the states give us, along with the bad things. So, so that's the vision.
So to take it to the mining side, so out of all the algorithms, I know it was kind of touched on a little bit, but why did you guys choose EquiHash over the others?
Well, we chose EquiHash because it's, well-known, relatively well known, and B, memory intensive. So this is the reason we chose EquiHash, right? And so right now, people are using, we changed the parameters. It's not the standard parameters because we didn't want ASICs to appear right out of the box. Yeah. Now we announced that we want to change the algorithm at least two more times. Two more times, and that's it. Just to leave it more democratic in the first year. Let the coin become bigger and let the market cap grow and become more stable in terms of, you know, market adoption. Because then people will hopefully feel that an investment in ASIC pays off, because, you know, they need to build a model, right? They need to see, okay, how much mining is going on, how much they can sell, when they can recover their investment. So right now it would be very hard for anyone to do. And then you could, you know, sometimes even end up with a situation where you have like very few ASICs on the market and they just eat up everything and nobody else is mining. So it's not a good situation. So that's why the strategy of being like, of like no ASICs in the first 18 months is like what we chose. And then, you know, and then people will build ASICs. And then ASICs are, you know, in a sense better because they're more loyal, right? So today, you know, the price changed a little bit, so miners just switch because they, you know, not all of them, some of them believe in a specific coin and mine it anyway. But, you know, you can see a correlation between the mining power and the price, like, very, very clearly. And, you know, this is not great for long-term security of the network. So, you know, once we are bigger and the network stabilizes, then we'll let ASICs go. And of course, we'll need to do a lot of thinking on the final algorithm because, you know, the algorithm itself defines how easy or difficult it is to build an ASIC. But this is still like half a year or 9 months in the future.
Okay.
Well, the GPU miners appreciate it because I know a lot of people mining Beam right now. So, and I think it's funny you bring up the point about ASICs because I know everybody, you know, especially as GPU miners, we're all anti-ASIC. But on a business side of it, I mean, ASICs are much better for you guys in a security sense. I mean, you can see all the coins that are getting 51% attack because they're depending on GPU miners. And as you stated, yeah. We just shift coins for profitability most of the time if we don't believe in the project. So great point.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, from a business perspective, right, if somebody's got a farm full of ASICs, they're not, I mean, they are financially tied to the coin that they purchased.
Right. They have a vested interest.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah. But so on the other side of that, right, because I think that there's a whole ecosystem behind the scenes of a coin. You've got the miners, the traders, the people who are long-term investors or holders. And there are a lot of communities that tend to focus on one element of the ecosystem and don't really play into all of the others. One thing that I'm always curious about, and being in your position, you're the best person to answer this. You, frankly, when you guys launched, you are one of the hot new coins in crypto, right? Everyone's paying attention to you, and that's got to be a lot of pressure. From a miner standpoint and a trader standpoint, right now you're not on, there's not a lot of liquidity, you're not on a ton of exchanges. What does that process look like behind the scenes to get on good exchanges, to make sure you're working with the right exchanges? How has that process been for you guys?
So the process is not very easy. We're talking to many exchanges. So there is work going on behind the scenes. I cannot, you know, disclose any details, but we,
sure.
But we know that it's important.
Right.
And we know that, you know, we need to get listed in better and bigger exchanges and also in different geographies. So there's a lot of work on that. And there is, as you said, there is pressure from the community, you know, when X or when Y, you know, people want to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. So the liquidity right now, from what I hear from traders, I mean, it's not stellar, but it's not that bad. You know, you can buy and sell Beam. You know, there are OTC players. Mm-hmm. There are several exchanges. And we are working with some well-known exchanges, I would say. And hopefully we'll have some good news. But
And you can just blink twice if Binance's recent maintenance was so that they could list you guys. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to put it on. No, but
that was my tin foil.
Yeah, that
theory.
Okay.
But no, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Look,
because nobody would see it on the podcast, right? If it's
right,
recorded,
it
right?
Us.
So, and nobody knows how many times I blinked, actually.
That's it. Just
okay,
so you guys
great.
Know, we did blink, and we have the confirmed number, but you'll never know. I mean, there's a lot of good exchanges out there. I know that oftentimes they can get a bad rap, but there's good and bad actors in any market. And I know that, you know, most of the miners right now that we've talked to aren't really keen on selling anyway. So it's kind of a mine and hold at this point when it comes to Beam.
Do you think that the issue with getting Beam or any kind of Mimblewimble on an exchange right now is due to the protocol and how it's so different to add as an asset?
Well, I think it was more like that in the beginning. So now both Beam and Grin are listed on like a dozen exchanges each. And both our and their API, I think, is now pretty mature. So yeah, there is some work to do, but it's pretty straightforward. Okay. So, I mean, now we can explain exactly what to do and how to do it. And we have all the APIs that are, you know, well documented and available, and everything's working. So it's less of a technical issue. But yeah, it requires some extra work. It's not like just adding another ERC20 token.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically, right now, I trade some cryptocurrencies from time to time. But, but yes, definitely right now, as far as Beam is concerned, it is a heavily OTC traded asset. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
to see
we know that.
It's kind of cool to see that because, you know, in the beginning, before exchanges and you were a miner, this is what you had to do. So it's nice to see people learning that again. Not a lot of people, I'd say, if they joined in the last year or two, really experience something like that. And then again, also you have, you know, it wasn't an ICO, right?
Yeah.
So they actually have to mine to get
Beam. Yeah, that's the only way to get Beam, yeah.
And to go off that too, one of the main differences between you and Grin, obviously, is the founder's rewards. So can you kind of touch on how you guys went about doing the founder's reward? I mean, obviously, as a foundation, you need to have funding. And you guys, you said that you did actually secure funding before launch. So, I mean, how can you kind of touch on your runway?
Absolutely.
And that?
Absolutely. So the model is like this. In the first 5 years, 80% of all the coins are issued to the miner, and 20% of the coins are issued to a treasury. Okay, so like today, with every block, a miner gets 80 coins, and then 20 coins are minted somewhere else. Okay, now out of those 20 coins, about 35% went to our investors. About 40 plus are for the core team and the advisors, and the 20% are for the foundation. Okay, so that's the breakdown. So the money raised from the investors is used now, you know, to support the team, to pay, you know, for all kinds of, you know, things and services that we are using as a company. Now, during 2019 or maybe early 2020, the foundation will become more and more active. The foundation has about 6 million Beam coins altogether, you know, spread out over 5 years, which is, you know, even with today's price, is a good amount of funds. And the foundation will eventually take over from the company and carry on the support of the protocol, right?
Because you guys don't want to be a security, right? You don't want Beam to be a security.
Well, I don't think it is related to that. Beam is a currency and not a security anyway. But the idea is to have something more decentralized, right? A lot of people might criticize and say, hey, you guys have a CEO, you have a CTO, so what if you become evil? Or, you know, it's a centralized model, which, you know, in part, I think the right critique is not the centralized nature of our model. Because if you look at any other project, it always has like some core development team, right, that makes all the decisions. Right. I don't think there is like a project which is like totally democratic, and, you know, every project has a leader, you know, maybe with the exception of Bitcoin, where it's like much, much, much more distributed. Although there as well, you know, we all know that there are certain key people whose opinion is like super valuable, right? Super important, and they could block certain things, right? But the company is like more vulnerable, I would say, right? A company could be closed down, right? Or you know, somebody could demand something from us, or just close down. So that's why we're moving to the foundation, which is much harder to close down because it's a Swiss foundation, it's a nonprofit, and it's all that. And the idea is that after the foundation kind of, you know, distributes all of its funds or not, you know, it should also kind of dissolve. Okay, so that the project becomes like really decentralized and as close to, you know, the Bitcoin model as possible.
More of a meritocracy.
Yeah.
So you've ran other businesses before. How does this compare? So being now in crypto and running Beam, how does this compare to previous roles that you've had where you're running
business? Well, it's super amazing. The speed of things in the crypto world is like so much faster than anything I saw before. Things are changing very fast. The technology is amazing. And, you know, although the crypto world is like small, but I'm not sure I should call this adoption, but you know, the dissemination of this news and of the interest is like, it's very fast. You know, we're like we're 3 months old, you know, as the protocol, right? The company is just 1 year old. I mean, that's a usual startup would just maybe barely release some sort of like ugly beta that nobody cares about, and you know, they're trying to, and here, you know, we have people from all over the world, like, you know, saying that, you know, buying, selling, mining, and they know about Beam. This is pretty amazing. So the speed is amazing, the technology is amazing, and this is really very different from what I've seen before.
So now on the flip side, the potential
is amazing.
So on the flip side of that, just to kick it back to you and play devil's advocate. So with traditional tech startups, right, the move fast and break things mantra is there, and it tends to be a bit more forgiving than we are in crypto. How has that impacted the team?
Well, yeah, here it's, since you're dealing with money, you don't want to break things, right? You don't really want to break things.
Right.
But this happens, right? It happened to us as well. And it happens, we see, you know, people in very respected projects, you know, finding like crazy bugs with inflation. And so we had so far two things that happened in January. One was we found a vulnerability in the wallet and we kind of scrambled to release it. And it was like, we had to hide it for some time because we didn't want to expose it before everyone updates. And it was like one thing, which was very stressful. And, you know, and another one, we had our blockchain stopped. You know, that was an amazing event. You know, it just stopped because there was some bug with specific UTXOs but we handled that. And it was kind of scary, but I think we went through that really well. And, you know, we put, you know, all the information, we're very open. You break things usually not because you want to break things, but because things kind of tend to break. So here you need to be much more careful, but, you know, shit happens. And the responsibility is much bigger because here, I mean, actually, if a project kind of breaks something and people kind of lose money, or there is an inflation bug, then, you know, that's it, I guess, right? So if you do it like a big technology mistake, I'm not sure you can get a second chance in the world of crypto.
Yeah.
Maybe it can be much harder, right? It's not like, you know, my mobile game didn't work for like 3 days. Okay, so, you know.
If you go off that, you know, kind of looking at Zcash, when Zcash had the most recent vulnerability happen, and I mean, even right now, like there's no way to prove that the exploit wasn't ever used. The only way to ever truly find if it was used would be have everyone, you know, go and all the supply transfers out of wallets again with no shielded transactions, which I don't think anyone's going to do.
So, well, but in this case, if it happened, then the guy who did it, you know, will just not send, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's scary. I mean, the foundation has stated that they don't think that it was exposed. But I mean, I tend to believe that
because
I believe
the technology
that as well.
Is so hard. But you know, some people might not. I'm just trying to look at the price chart. Yeah, there was actually a dip, but like not a huge one on the date of announcement. Like the price went down, but then, you know, things continued like business as usual. Because again, you know, with Zcash, you know, with trusted setup, there is a certain level of trust in the team that people need to have in order to trade it, right? Because if the team was evil, you know, they could just collude and, you know, just have the secret key somewhere and just print whatever amounts of money they wanted. So, and if we believe they're not doing that, then we should also believe that, you know, they were very open about this bug. And it's, you know, and I think they explained it's very, very unlikely that anybody could have discovered this bug, because there really are very few people on the planet who can understand this math. Right, which is like one of the, you know, you can say one of the downsides of Zcash, because, you know, although it's open source, it's very hard to really kind of get through this this math of the ZK snarks.
Yeah, no, I think that covers it pretty well. Going off of, you know, other protocols right now, obviously one of the biggest announcements that you guys have had this year was the Litecoin Foundation and Beam together. So what's going on with that?
So the cooperation there is more around technology. Litecoin is interested in seeing how they can implement it. So we are kind of helping them to learn about Mimblewimble. So there's not much is going on right now. So we're kind of looking at, you know, potential architecture, and we'll probably have something in the coming weeks to discuss in more detail. So initially, you know, we just agreed that we'll help them learn more and maybe, you know, do some coding for them or help them use some of our code. But it's not about like an integration between the two coins or anything like that. Okay. Although we might have something, we might do atomic swaps in the future, because we're now working very hard on atomic swap with Bitcoin. You know, once we have that, I think we actually even did already in the labs, like doing the same with Litecoin, because it's, you know, a similar code base.
Okay.
Yeah, so to take it back to mining, that's what I always do. But so
mining is the lifeblood of this whole world. Yeah,
damn right.
Nothing about mining.
So January was a wild month for miners, right? Between Vail, Beam, Grin, like probably the craziest month that we've had mining in a long time. And of course, the miners kind of know the differences between the three. And my big thing, right, is like I'll tweet out, you know, yeah, mining Beam, mining Grin, Mimblewimble, whatever, and you know, all the miners have already picked their sides, you know, Team Beam, Team Grin, whatever. But I'll get messages from people that aren't miners, which brings me back to Earth. Like, some people don't know what Mimblewimble actually is. So for those people, what are the main differences between Beam and Grin, and what sets you guys apart?
Well, for miners, there are two major things. One is the efficiency of different cards, right? We have just recently published a small study or a Medium article with a link to a data table where you can just enter, you know, the current values and the current costs, the current prices of the coin, you know, electricity costs, and see which coin is more profitable for which card. So specifically in that time, we saw that Beam is much more profitable to mine on AMD cards than Green or Ethereum. So it might change with the price, you know, now Green price went up in the past couple of days, so we need to revisit that. But the different algorithms kind of define which cards are better for which coin. So that's one. And two is the emission schedule, right? So Green is 60 coins forever. So as a miner, you could get those 60 coins next year, the year after, and whenever you want. Now with B, theme, like this is the only year when you'll be able to get 80 coins per block. So it kind of seems like a good idea to do it now, right? And then, you know, see what happens next year. But this year is the year to, and that's why we designed it that way, because we wanted people to think exactly this. Okay, this 80 coins per block is very limited. It's just, you know, there's 9 months left. So let's use our you know, facilities to mine this thing. And then we'll have more than anyone else.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of people outside the mining community that learned about inflation the hard way with Grin. So it was pretty funny watching that chart. People buying it, you know, 20, 15, 10, all the way down. Then it hits 250 and everybody's like, oh, crap, what have I done? So
yeah,
the mining guys.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's a cruel world. Yeah, you need to really think hard. Yeah, no free lunches here anymore.
Do you think that, I mean, people look at Grin and I guess not so much Beam because of what you stated with the deflationary model, but do you think that they made Grin as something that's more used to be, say, like a cash kind of aspect with that in mind? I mean, well, I've heard that argument. So
yeah, that's the argument. I think that's the argument. So in like theoretically, people say, well, you know, deflationary coins are better for store of value. Inflationary coins are better for means of exchange. Well, I'm not like I don't have a PhD in economics, and I think you can argue it both ways, right? Gold is store of value, right? But it is inflationary, right? There is like 1-2% of total supply added every year, right? It's not, I mean, it's finite, but nobody knows how much gold there is, right?
We can just find an asteroid that's has all the supply that we need.
And yeah, then, you know. We might. I think it's a good store of value because the new supply is small, right?
Yeah.
But it's been going on, like gold mining has been going on for what? I don't know, 5,000 years or whatever, for quite some time, right? And it was initially used as means of exchange, and now it's more used as store of value, right? So I think eventually you could use both in both ways.
Yeah,
and
I totally
it's
agree.
Something, but yeah, you could say that, you know, deflationary coin is kind of feels better as a store of value because you want to grab it now.
Yeah,
and then it should become more expensive. Maybe there is such a thing, but you know, with Bitcoin, you know, we could see it go up and go down. So I don't think it's like a very very clear cut, like a very simple equation that says, well, just do it deflationary and it will be a great store of value. Do deflationary, it will be like great means of change. Not sure. There will be many coins of Beam and much more. Coins of Grin, but you know they're all divisible, so you could use it both ways, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I mean my biggest thing with Beam as a trader, the charts that, you know, I'm always worried, is it gonna do a Zcash where it just always goes down? For, I mean, obviously Zcash doesn't always go down, but when you look at the overall timeline, Zcash has just been doing this since the start. Like, if you remember Zcash, when it started trading, it went up for like, I think it was like 7 BTC per, or sorry.
Yeah, right in the beginning, yeah, because the supply was like so limited.
Yes.
And on very small volumes, which are kind of deceptive, right? So buys one coin for, yeah, it started with like almost $2,000, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was more of a joking thing, but that is something that a lot of people talk about, at least in the community, is that, you know, because of its founder's reward and how it looks fundamentally, that it would just be kind of like turn it out to be like a Zcash on the charts perspective. But I don't really think that
we were actually worried in the beginning, and you know, we're thinking, well, you know, in the, like, how do we prevent this thing? We even had some thoughts about, you know, locking all the miner rewards for like the first month, so that, you know, when the trading starts, there is enough coins, because we were kind of worried, okay, what happens if like the first miner gets the first 80 beam and then, you know, sells them for, you know, $8,000, and then it will be crazy, yeah. Right? But it didn't happen. It did. So we didn't do any of that. We didn't do any locking, anything like that. It didn't happen. And the price, I mean, it kind of behaves relatively smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, we don't see any crazy things. Well, there was some crazy stuff in the end of January, but right now it is pretty, you know, smooth, you know, by the standards of the crypto world, right? It's still kind of jumping and
I like seeing the market cap go up and then price staying relatively
That's a good thing. Yeah, it's a healthy thing to see. So people are not kind of depreciating. So they see like the value in a coin and not in the whole system. Because otherwise, obviously, the coin price would go down with every new coin. But it's not the case.
So Alex, I know we've talked about quite a bit regarding Beam and the project itself. What I'd like to really dig into for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes that we're here on the show is your vision for the project overall, your vision for Beam, where you want the foundation to go, and the ideal adoption scenario for you guys.
Okay. So now we have released the basic blockchain, and, you know, there's still tons of work, but our goal is to make it the next generation platform. Okay, and this is what Beam, the company, will continue doing. Okay, the foundation will take over supporting the basic layer of the protocol. Okay, and Beam, the company, will continue building services on top of this blockchain. Right, and those services include, as I mentioned, confidential assets, you know, being able to trade other assets in a fully confidential way, probably STOs, you know, maybe some sort of distributed exchanges, federated sidechains, all kinds of things in this area. So, you know, each of those things having like a clear business model and adding compliance for all these use cases exactly in the required dosage. Okay. And the vision is, in the end, as you know, as we began with, is to create an ecosystem which is confidential and where people can be compliant and can play ball with the existing ecosystem.
And then, you know, moving forward, well, you mentioned STOs. So that's how far away? I mean, is this something that we could see within the next 3 months, 6 months, year?
A year is probably... probably like more realistic, although we might have some sort of POCs in like 3 to 6 months. So it's something we're very actively looking at right now. So the STO concept is very interesting. Some people are skeptical. Some people think this is the future. We are very interested in the technology aspect. We're talking to people in the space. We hear that privacy is a real concern, like very real there. Because, you know, it's usually like an SEO is a closed list of people, so everybody could know like who is on the list, and then everybody could know how many shares of this or that, you know, this particular wallet has. Not very good.
Right.
So our vision there is to build a possibility to issue those SEO tokens on our blockchain and then trade in full confidentiality and to comply with all the rules that are that STO has to comply with, you know, KYC and you know, all the transaction rules where you can only sell to somebody who meets certain criteria and so on and so forth.
One thing that I had a question, obviously one of the latest updates that you guys were working on are the sparse blocks.
Oh yeah.
Can you kind of break that down for me?
So the basic idea is to make less information available. Actually, I cannot go into that much of technical detail. I still have to study that, frankly.
Okay.
So, sorry about that. But the idea is to make the catching up with blockchain much easier, so that you only have to download a very small amount of information on your wallet, and it's especially useful for your, like, you know, your PC when you had it closed like for a week and then you open it up. So in the current version, you had to wait for a long time. It's not even the initial sync, which is pretty quick, but it's the like time when you were offline. Yeah, it's a fast catch up. It's a fast catch up. That's right.
Yeah, that's really great, because I know, like,
and we had, you know, personally also, we had, you know, you open up your wallet after it was down for, like, it was not open for a week, and it took a lot of time to sync, and it was kind of pretty annoying. So we figured, you know, we had to, you know, we actually updated this, and we put it onto the roadmap, although we didn't originally, you know, we didn't know it was kind of, we didn't realize the problem was so big, and you know, in order to do that, we kind of started thinking how to solve it. And now, actually, we already released a test net, and we should be releasing the mainnet version of that in, like, in the coming days.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest issues as a miner is you have a wallet closed, you want to send some of your coin to it, and then you look and see how long it's going to sync, and you go make yourself a sandwich and come back at some point. So that'd be
huge. Yeah. So now it will be just a coffee, just a quick coffee, not like a serious club sandwich. Hopefully, yeah.
Well, so Alex, as we round things out here, one question that I'd love to ask, what's something that you're really excited about in the coming weeks, months, and years?
I am really excited about crypto world becoming much more grown up, much more serious, with bad and weak actors being weeded out. And we're seeing that happen, and strong, serious actors remaining. You know, and that's what people are thinking. And that, to me, will signal much more mass adoption, because all the scams and fakes that were there in the past, you know, couple of years are not there anymore. So only serious players who have substance can justify their existence. And that means that the industry will start, and already starts working, to see how it fits, not some wild dream of, you know, Lambos tomorrow, but of, like, real use cases and real business. And it will not be easy, right? Because, you know, it's still not, hasn't been, like, sold. But only serious people remain, and they will find, and they are looking and are finding and will eventually find a way to make it really big, because right now crypto is small, right? It's not meaningful in the global scale. I mean, it's very little, and it's a playground of very few. And we really want it to be like a thing for everyone, right? Everybody's talking about, you know, the next revolution, the next wave of, you know, we want it to be the internet money, or the money, or a big percentage of all the financial activity. You know, it's really tiny. So, and I hope that, you know, Beam and what we're doing is pushing it into that direction. And we're talking about this, you know, coexisting with the financial system, but saving and keeping the privacy of the users. So we're trying to bridge this. And I think there are other teams that are working on, you know, different aspects of bridging this and making this really usable by everyone. So that's the exciting thing. There's no, like, you know, huge secret that I could have heard in those behind those closed doors that, you know, Satoshi will return tomorrow. $1 million.
Yeah, no.
I 100% agree, though. 100%.
Yeah. So it's, you know, to me, it's like this whole industry is just in for a lot of hard work, you know, and less, you know, money falling from the ceiling, from the sky. And that's like any other industry, and I think it's good. I think it's eventually good. Although, you know, I wouldn't mind some money falling from right now, but it doesn't look like anyone's there to throw it at me. So I need to work hard. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys have been working really hard, and I definitely appreciate you know, what you do and what the team has been working on. It's not easy making a UI wallet that people can, you know, download on their iPhone and Android, you know.
Yeah, it's not easy, and it's not probably not as exciting as, you know, doing some cryptography and advanced stuff. But, you know, that's what you need. Yep. And we actually like this, you know, this is our task to make it pretty usable. And yeah. So the mobile wallets, yeah, they're nice. We just released this iOS test flight version, and it's not very far from being, you know, from being really available. So now it's for testing only, but, you know, in several weeks, we'll be able to release it for mainnet, and then people will be able to pay. I really love it. I mean, it's beautiful, both in Android and on iOS. Yeah.
I think that's the biggest issue too, right, is that you have to make things that are typically, they don't look pretty on the back end, right? And then making everything easy for people to use on the front end. You typically see some kind of trade-off there, but that's how, you know, mass adoption happens. Is
right. It needs to be transparent and simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, right now, I think that our wallet is kind of, the usability is on par with, you know, the more well-known and established best wallets out there. And we'll continue doing that. Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that's a great point for us to wrap up on, Alex. I mean, we really appreciate you making the time to spend it with us this Sunday, and the show will be coming out here in a few days. We're excited to share it with everyone. This has been, I gotta say, we've been getting a ton of messages behind the scenes just in anticipation of this interview. So we do appreciate great. You, and we're excited to see what continues to come from Dean.
Great, yeah. Good to hear that. No, I just wanted to thank you guys. It was a pleasure. Great question. Great conversation. Loved it. So, bye. Thanks a lot.
Bye, Alex.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Hashrate Crypto Mining Podcast. We would love it if you would subscribe to this show on your preferred podcast platform and leave us a review with your feedback. Also, if you could help us grow the crypto mining community by sending this show to a friend or sharing it on Twitter, that would be epic. Let's grow the mining community and help other people see how much fun it is. And of course, remember to follow us on Twitter at Hashrate. That's H4SHR8. If you want to snag some mining merch or to schedule a consultation with the guys, visit www.hashrate.com. H4SHR8.com.